Welcome back to the program. First hour of the program is brought to you by Thomas Bax at American Family Insurance. 314-298-7770. Call now and mention 590 and get a $10 gift card just for getting a quote. On the text line, Rice City Lemming texting in, that was Iggy who matched with you, Burger. He was hoping to wear your mom's skin as a robe. And then King of All Filipinos texting in, our people are looked down upon by other Asians, probably due to the amount of hairless gentlemen named Ephraim. Didn't know that about the Philippines. Interesting. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is Brendan Schaefer from theintrepidstl.com. You can follow him on Twitter at bschaefer12. Brendan, how are you, sir?
Pretty good, Matt. I'm learning a lot about culture already on this interview here.
That's what we do here. We educate. What was the name of that thing you always torture Giamatti with? History, culture, and what?
Humiliation.
And humiliation, yeah. So that's what we try to do here.
It's very interesting. Good program you've got going on, I can tell.
I'm proud as punch. What can I say? So how did you and the wife celebrate the Cardinals getting back to 500 for the first time in a couple of months? Did you, like, make feverish love on the, like, right there in front of the set during the post-game show? Or how'd you celebrate last night?
It's a question he loves hearing.
No, I don't think any of that happened. nice to see.
Well, it seems like everybody here at the station is either getting married or having babies. I mean,
that is a commonality at our station. Not for us though. We've already done the married thing and the other thing. Not for some time. So, but thanks for checking in. We appreciate that.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm here for. We're learning. You and I are learning together, Brendan. That's what we do.
Absolutely.
So last night, this Cardinals team is actually kind of frustrating. And it's always fun. Like today is August 8th. And everybody would say this is Jeff Fisher Day because it's 8-8. And it seems like this team kind of reminds me of Jeff Fisher, like when you think that they're down and out, and then they kind of come crawling back and making you think that, okay, they might be able to do something this year. What is this Cardinals team for real? Are they a true contender in the National League Central, or are we just kind of lying to ourselves?
Before I get to answering that question, I do have to mention my gripe with Jeff Fisher Day being 8-8. I think it should be more like July 9th.
I think we did celebrate it then. I think you're right. Everyone in St. Louis had a very fun...
Oh, you can celebrate on April 12th,
I think we
too.
I think we all made jokes on July 9th.
Yeah, 8-8 has given him way too much credit for what he's done.
Well,
he never did go 8-8 in St. Louis.
No, not here.
And there's not a hilariously awkward, ironic quote from him about being 8-8.
That's true. But continue your thoughts,
that's
sir.
That's fair. But as for the Cardinals this season, I don't know. I think you're going to need a lot more 11-run games if you're going to be a contender. I'd say the more times they score 11, the better their chances of making the playoffs probably are. That feels like a safe kind of assumption. But I think, in general, if you can avoid the one-run games against the crap pitchers the Reds are throwing out against you, that would also go a long way toward this team giving the Cubs a run for their money. I mean, I think they can do it if they can find a way to consistently put together 5 or 6 runs a night, but I don't know. Are we going to see the Cardinals a week from now, or even let's just say this weekend, get stymied by someone like, I don't know, Jaime Garcia at Busch Stadium? If this offense can't be consistent, I don't see any way for them to do it. But if they can start to score more runs on a regular basis, I think you're seeing the bullpen maybe start to kind of fall into line, especially at the back end with Rosenthal. The starting pitching's been good pretty much all season, so it's going to take more consistent offense in order to do this thing, but hey, that's what we've been saying all along.
It was nice to see Carlos Martinez get out of the first inning and not give a slew of runs. That kind of seems to have been a theme with him all season. I'm not sure why that's happening. I know some people were talking about it's a maturity level. I think it's got something to do with the way that he warms up. Either he's warming up too long or he's warming up too short. What do you think's going on with Carlos and why he can't get out of the first inning without giving up a couple of runs?
I'd like to think that it's more coincidental than anything else, but if you're looking for a reason, I mean, you could think that he is a guy who gets amped up for his starts and maybe could be at some times just a little bit too amped up out of the gate and then starts to kind of settle in as games go along. But again, you mentioned last night, I think he was fine. I'd like to think that it's just more coincidental and, you know, certain guys have some struggles at certain times of their seasons, of their careers. Hopefully, from here on out, Carlos will be, the ace-like pitcher in the first inning that he's been in innings 2 through 8 or 9 or however far he's gotten.
The Royals had two cornerstones that are in their infield that are going to be free agents at the end of the year. Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. Any chance that the Cardinals make a run at either one of those players in the offseason?
When Moose hit that home run yesterday, that was kind of going through my mind, because I think more and more we're starting to view third base as a potential spot to land a power bat for the Cardinals. It kind of depends on what you want to do with Matt Carpenter. I imagine that he'll remain on the team for one, and most likely remain at first base because it is his best position. And so we talked about, how do you make up for potentially his lack of power, or even just the idea that he's more of a leadoff hitter than he is a middle of the order bat. And I think one way to do that would be by going across the diamond and getting a perennial kind of 30 home run guy. Well, Mike Moustakas looks like that guy, at least for this season. He's up to 32 home runs now. I think the Cardinals would be better served to have Jed Jerko in a role where he can play some third, play some second, even fill in at some first base, but only end up around the 300 AB mark instead of passing that by the beginning of August. He's looked pretty run down. He's had a really big skid as of late, and you saw Greg Garcia in the lineup a couple nights in a row. Jed will be back in there tonight, so we'll see how he does. But I think that that's a pretty interesting idea, that Mike Moustakas might be the most attractive third base option to kind of shore up the Cardinals' infield. Will they go after him? You know, it's probably too soon to be speculating on that, but certainly we can discuss it, and I think he'd be an interesting fit.
You mentioned how Dexter Fowler fits into that kind of odd equation. Do you sense some trouble on the horizon when you take a guy who's supposed to be batting first and playing center field, and he ends the season batting fifth and playing left field?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say that the trouble is already there with regard to, you know, Dexter Fowler's probably not thrilled about the way the season has unfolded for him, the injuries being one element of that. But sure, the idea that Tommy Pham is probably already a better defensive center fielder than Dexter Fowler is. We're already talking about this in year one of a five-year contract, and so where are we going to be 2 or 3 years from now? Is the expectation still going to be for Dexter Fowler personally to be the center fielder? Is it going to be the leadoff man? He's already lost that role as well. So certainly I think there's disappointment there already. You can kind of see that leaking out in some of the quotes that he gives. It's really no different than the idea that Yadier Molina wants to be in there every day and wants to bat fifth. I just think that Mike Matheny's already dealing with these issues of trying to manage some pretty significant egos in many ways, and Fowler is just another one of those guys. You know, he's going to probably be around for the long term. I don't see them being able to look to trade that contract. And so, yeah, it would be surprising to me if Fowler does play left field if they make the switch with Tommy Pham, just like it would be surprising to me if Yadier Molina bats anywhere below fifth in the lineup on a regular basis, because Mike Matheny, is trying his best to manage these guys. And in my view, and in the view of many others, you just go ahead and tell the guys where they're going to play, tell them where they're going to bat, and that's the end of it because you're the manager. But I understand that that's not his style. He wants to be a player's manager, and so that means managing some egos. He's already working on that with Molina and Fowler. Will it get any worse? I think with regard to the idea that Fowler wants to be playing center field and expects it, it could potentially get worse a couple of years down the road when he's obviously going to deteriorate, his speed will decrease, and he will be a lesser center fielder then than he even is now.
Well, hopefully,
I don't know that it's going to be a big deal, but it is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Well, I mean, and when that day does come, hopefully Fowler won't be as, not as open to moving to left field or right field. If he knows, like, look, man, I've really lost a step, I'm not running down these fly balls like I used to, I need to be moved to left field. He doesn't seem like he's an unreasonable guy. Whenever they moved Matt Carpenter to leadoff and they bumped him down to second or third, he was like, wherever I have to go to help the team, that's where I'm willing to bat. But, this whole thing on center field, I think is maybe more of a pride ego thing. But I think once he realizes that he's lost a step 2 or 3 years from now, I think he's kind of lost one now. But he doesn't think so. But, 2 or 3, when it's really evident, he may not be as, close-minded when it comes to leaving center field.
I mean, I would hope that would be the case. But like you mentioned, the comparison to leadoff, when that took place, he did say, I'll do whatever it takes for this team to be successful. I'm a team guy. I'll bat wherever they tell me to bat. But he didn't say that with regards to center field this year. I know that maybe down the line that stance could change, but it was interesting that when the subject was broached with him, he said, I came here to play center field, and kind of drew that line in the sand. So that's why I say I doubt that Tommy Pham will move to center and flip Dexter to left this season. But at some point, that's going to become an obvious move the Cardinals should make, and then we'll see how difficult it is to convince Dexter that that's the best move for the team.
Bad news about Mike Moustakas. Both he and Eric Hosmer are represented by Scott Boras. So
Cha-ching.
Yeah, there we go. Sky Boris, man, how much money does this guy have? It seems like he represents at least a third of Major League Baseball.
I think he's doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, he's not doing too bad.
At some point, the Cardinals are going to have to, we've talked about it time and time again, they're going to have to pay up to get one of their players, one of these big-name guys. Moustakas doesn't necessarily qualify as that, and I know a lot of Cardinal fans would say, just wait a year and go after Manny Machado, but we probably should start to be realistic about how possible that really is going to be.
Yeah, Moustakas is he's a good player. I like him a lot, and he's going to be I understand like the Cardinals, they need to spend, and I'm with you on that, but what's the reality of it? The likelihood of them signing Moustakas is probably more realistic than signing Manny Machado.
That is true, but also, I don't know exactly off the top of my head how old Moustakas is, but it kind of could have that feel of a Dexter Fowler contract,
he's
of a Yadier Molina contract. 28, so that's not quite as bad as some of these guys when they enter free agency and they're 31, 32. You could get Moustakas for several years of his prime and probably be okay. But I know that one thing the Cardinals are going to want to avoid is to get into too many of these contracts where they're locked into players who are pretty good players, but by the time they decline a little bit with age, you're talking about Mike Leake on the books for four more, Dexter on the books for four more after this one, Yadi on the books for three more after this one. They don't want to get caught in too many of those situations, so it'll be interesting to see how they approach filling the holes that are obvious in the organization.
Do you think they try to re-sign Lance Lynn?
I do not. I would be very surprised if they did. They might make an offer, but I would be really surprised if he ends up back in St. Louis.
Do you think that they're just going to move on, or do you think that he's just going to price himself out?
I mean, I think it's been obvious for over a year now, maybe not quite that long, but certainly since the last offseason, that he was going to be content to test free agency. He said that in radio interviews and in other places at the time. And so in the beginning of the year, you'll remember like back in April or May, he was having a good start to the season and was asked one day in the clubhouse if he would consider an extension. And he said all the right things and said he would be open to it. But it just seemed at the time, even then, like even though he might like it, even though the team certainly appreciates his production, that it's just going to be a matter of dollars and cents. And I think that for what Lance Lynn should bring on the open market, the Cardinals are going to elect to kind of roll with some of their younger options and finally test out some of these prospects at the major league level.
Yeah, everything you're hearing about Jack Flaherty down in Memphis is going to make you go, yes, bring Jack Flaherty up next year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been excellent. He's got an ERA below 3 down there at the AAA level, and you've seen Luke Weaver in some nice flashes. You're going to have Alex Reyes back. If this organization keeps touting its prospects and hanging on to the prospects through trade deadlines and what have you, they're eventually going to have to show what these prospects can do. Otherwise, you kind of lose all their value. And so if you're not going to give them chances, you should be moving them in ways to better the organization in other areas. So I think they're going to roll with at least one young pitcher in that spot next year, and they'll try to mix and match and see which guy takes claim to that spot.
The last time I saw Luke Weaver play in a Major League Baseball game in Milwaukee, I really liked the way he looked. I don't know about you. I'm not a big Luke Weaver guy. To me, I think he's certainly got the height, but he doesn't have the build, in my opinion, to be a Major League Baseball pitcher, at least not a starter. He doesn't look like a horse.
He kind of reminds you of Mike Leake a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
The skinny build. But the thing about Weaver is he was hitting 96 in that Milwaukee start, whereas Leake usually is hovering in the 91, 92 range.
Yeah, he can sling it.
He's got some oomph behind his fastball. So, I don't know. I kind of agree with you. I think he's a back-of-the-rotation kind of starter. But if he's that for a contender and can log some innings for you, he could be an interesting piece in the rotation.
Brendan Schaefer from the IntrepidSTL.com joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at bschaefer12. Why is it every time that the Cardinals send one of these prospects, like a Randall Grichuk, or now even a Stephen Piscotty, they send him down to Memphis, they seem to kind of fix the swing, and then he's up, and then, you know, a week or two later, the swing is full of holes again? Is it because of the difference in the pitching level between Major League Baseball and AAA, or is it basically just John Mabring?
I feel like when it comes to Grichuk, you can kind of separate his name from the rest of them because, you know, they did it with Wong a little bit last year, but he really never did come around and had a decent second half, but overall wasn't a great season for him last year. Grichuk, though, if I had to guess, it's just to do with the fact that probably when he goes down there, they're telling him to simplify his approach and to focus on the pitches he can hit and let everything else go, take more pitches in general. And so I feel like he comes back with that fresh in his mind, a simplified approach, but then after a while,
that kind of departs from him. And I don't know if that's a Mabry thing. I don't know exactly what the John Mabry's role in telling Randall Grichuk, you know, how to approach hitting is. I don't know what he's telling him. So it's kind of hard to speculate on that. But certainly there's a frustration level there from Cardinals fans who look at it and say, hey, if all your gurus, your hitting coaches down in the minor leagues, are where do you send these guys to get right, why are those guys not here able to help them on a daily basis? And that, I mean, that's a fair question, and it wouldn't surprise me if there was some level of coaching change that happens in the offseason. I don't know if that means letting go of a guy like Mabry, but maybe it means promoting one of those other hitting coaches from the lower ranks on a more regular basis.
It was last week, I believe, I heard you and Brian Hoffman fill in for Frank Cusumano on the Hollywood Casino Press Box, heard Monday through Friday right here, 10 to noon on 590 The Fan. That how do you change the Mozeliak keeps talking about changing the culture in the clubhouse. How do you make that change and keep the manager?
I think that, and I'm hoping this is what we see play out this offseason. I know a lot of people feel like the manager has got to be held responsible for some of those things, but when you start to think about some of the elements that he's dealing with, and we've touched on some of them, the Yachty situation, where he's certainly got an ego, the Dexter Fowler situation, where you can see that starting to bud. We've talked about Matt Carpenter and not owning up to his mistakes at times, but being willing to point it out when others are making those similar mistakes. There's a lot of things going on that I don't think you blame Mike Matheny for on this Cardinals team. I don't know if that means you get rid of the players who you see publicly having these conversations about, but I think it just means, in general, a shakeup of the roster where, and I've told you this privately, I'd like to see three new starters at position player spots for the beginning of 2018. Whether it's a third baseman, a shortstop, and an outfielder, whatever the case may be, enough of a turnover to where it just brings a different vibe to the room, and maybe it's a veteran that you bring in that can kind of help unite some of the other guys and just change the vibe of this team to where it's just in a new direction. Because if they don't want to fire the manager, which it doesn't seem they want to do, and I'm okay with that, he's had a pretty good winning record for the first 4 years of his managerial career. Obviously, it's been on a downturn, and so how much equity is built up, how long can you stick with the guy? Knowing how the ownership feels about Mike Matheny, I feel like it's a non-starter to suggest he's going to be let go before at least getting one more chance to right the ship. And I feel like if they're going to go that direction, they're going to have to do it with wildly different players, because otherwise, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Your colleague Craig Edwards from Viva Albertos, we had him on last week, and he seems to think that the reason why Yachty posted what he posted is that there's other players in the clubhouse that have kind of felt the same way Yachty did, but know that he's kind of like a made guy, for lack of a better term, in that clubhouse, and he could post something like that without any kind of, you know, real blowback from ownership. Do you agree with that theory?
I think that could be fair, especially evident in the fact that several of the teammates actually liked the Instagram posts. So I think that theory might carry some weight. The problem I have with it to some extent is the idea that I know that Molina's kind of vendetta in this situation is definitely for him personally as much as anything else, because he does expect to play every single day, and he does expect to be batting fifth, even if the statistics do not warrant him doing so. And so I feel like that's just some of Yachty's pride kind of coming out. But it would make sense, too, that if there were other gripes that we don't really know about publicly that have happened within this clubhouse, and then this is just the one that the only guy who really could afford to do so in Molina decided to make it public and take it out to the public, that everybody else could kind of jump on board and throw some support his way, because they could say, you know, I wasn't able to do this when I was upset about X or Y, but it kind of is my way of chipping in to show that, you know, maybe we aren't so thrilled about the way things are being run. We don't really know what any of that would entail, but I do think it's kind of interesting to wonder.
I saw this last night that Mike Trout hit his 1,000th career hit on his 26th birthday, and it got me thinking that if he stays healthy, do you think he's a legitimate shot to, or a legitimate threat to Pete Rose's record of the 4,256 hits in Major League Baseball? Do you think that he's got a real good shot of knocking that down?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's ever going to touch that. When did Trout start? Wasn't he like 20 years old? So he's been around for, it seems like, 6 or maybe even 7 years. This might be his 7th season.
He started in 2011.
Yeah, so this would be season number 7. So, I mean, okay, he'd be maybe to 2,000, but no, I think he can get to 3,000. I don't think anyone's touching Pete Rose's record, though.
He's so much fun to watch play. They got to get him on a better team other than Anaheim.
Oh, I know. I don't know how it happens, because anytime, you know, it's almost become like a taboo to discuss the idea of a Trout trade, because you kind of look like an imbecile, because who would want to trade away the best player in baseball? But the Angels just have such a bad system that you just kind of marvel at the idea of what it could potentially bring back if they did trade him. But I just want Andrelton Simmons for the Cardinals so that you can keep your Mike Trout, I guess.
Well, the thing is that Mike Trout, and he doesn't seem like he's the type of guy. He needs to demand a trade, and I don't think he's going to do that. He doesn't seem like he's that type of player.
Well, you know, for him living in Southern California, probably not the worst place to be. So I don't know if I'd be saying, yeah, trade me, I got to get out of here, and then you're spending your time in, you know, Minnesota or something. I don't know.
What do you have against Minnesota? It's beautiful up there.
Nothing, but I mean, I'm just talking about if you're going to make your home there, and that's the winters you're dealing with. I don't even like dealing with St. Louis winters, so I can only imagine what it's like up north.
How stunned would you be if the Los Angeles Dodgers were not representing the National League in the World Series?
Not that stunned, because they're the Dodgers, and they seem to blow it every season in the playoffs. They made it a little further, I guess, last year than in previous seasons. But I feel like they're definitely reliant on Clayton Kershaw's health to make a run in October, which is kind of suspect at this time. They've got some stronger supplementary characters in their rotation, I think, this year than they have in years past. But I still wouldn't be surprised to see either the pitching of the Washington Nationals or just the overwhelming offense and kind of stupid, obnoxious magic of the Cubs kind of return, and for either of those teams to make a run. The Nationals would surprise me, not on paper, but just because they're also kind of cursed too. They still have a lot of playoff
series. And their bullpen's awful too.
Yeah, and they're going to have issues with that. So it wouldn't shock me necessarily, and I mentioned it today on the Midday Grind, I'd love to see the Dodgers just win every game for the rest of the regular season, win like 125 or whatever it would be, but then lose in the first round of the playoffs to like the Diamondbacks or the Rockies. I think it would be just kind of hysterical. And I'm not a Dodger hater or anything. Those are just kind of the storylines.
Kind of sounds like you are.
I know it comes off that way. I just think it would be kind of cool. You know, the team that wins 120 games, they lose to their division rival who snuck in with a wild card in the NLDS.
They have a winning percentage right now of 720. Or,
that's silly.
712. That is ridiculous.
Oh,
what their winning percentage is right now. I mean, this is unlike anything. Without goes without saying, the best team since the 2001 Seattle Mariners. As far as
the
record
goes.
Yeah,
they win like 116 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember going to the, remember the ESPN zone that they had in Times Square?
I was probably 5 years old, okay, so I don't know if I remember that.
I'm not saying that you went there, but did you guys remember that, the ESPN zone in Times Square?
Don't get the attitude, Matt. It'll be all right, buddy.
I remember
I don't recall.
I was in New York back in 2001 and going to the ESPN zone to watch just the Mariners play. And everybody was glued to watching the Mariners play. This is in New York City, and we're watching the Seattle Mariners. But, I mean, that team, like you're saying about the Dodgers, that Seattle Mariners team, I don't think they even made it out of the first round.
Right, and now you've got the Tinseltown team potentially doing the same thing, and just kind of I think that's just like a win for the Midwest if a team from L.A. wins 120 games and gets knocked out in the first round. Maybe that's the way I view it.
What do you think happens to the Chicago Cubs? I mean, they kind of took off like a house on fire right after the All-Star break, winning 13 of 16, and their last 10, they've only won 5. Seems like they've slowed down a little bit. What do you think's going on with the Northsiders?
My preseason prediction was Red Sox over Cubs in the World Series. I said earlier today that I was going to stick with that, even though the Cubs, definitely not the team that we thought they were to begin the season. They've shown flashes, like you mentioned, but I feel like the Brewers are out of this thing in the Central. The Cubs can play, you know, 500 baseball the rest of the way and finish a little bit above 500. The Cardinals, the onus would still be on St. Louis to catch them, even if Chicago played 500 the rest of the way. And so I feel like you're going to end up seeing the Cubs find a little run in them before the end of the season. I don't know. They'll end up around 88 or 89 wins maybe. And that'll probably be enough to hold off the Cardinals in the division and to play in the Washington Nationals in the first round. We talked about why I'm not really too thrilled about them. They just can't win any series. And so since I wasn't shocked to see the Dodgers, as I mentioned, potentially lose in an early round in the playoffs, that could put the Cubs to the World Series. So I think they'll be fine. It's kind of nice to see them struggle a little bit after everything seemed to come so easy to them last year. But I still feel like they're gonna make a run this postseason. I don't know why. I can't shake the feeling.
The Cardinals now finally at 500. Do they finish the year above or below it?
Oh, I think they can. They should finish the year above. They've got a pretty weak schedule. I believe like a week ago at this time, they put up the graphic that they had the lowest remaining win percentage for their opponents the rest of the way. So, of course, that's going to mean you're going to have to perform better against the NL Central opponents than they have so far, the likes of the Pirates and the Reds and the Brewers as well. But I still think they should be able to win 83 or so games. I just don't know how much above that they're going to be able to muster.
Brendan Schaefer from the IntrepidSTL.com. We appreciate your time this evening, sir. Enjoy the game tonight.
Sure thing, boys. Have a good one.
Thank you, Brendan. That is Brendan Schaefer. You can follow him on Twitter at BSchaefer12. And, of course, you could hear him during the Hollywood Casino press box with Frank Cusimano from 10 to 12. And then the midday grind from 12 to 3 with Martin Kilcoyne and Charlie Marlowe. Yes, sir.
The Denver Nuggets just completely screwed up everything, Matt Berger.
What'd they do? Who'd they trade?
They ruined some of the best jerseys in the NBA.
What'd they do?
They completely changed their jerseys.
Okay.
And they completely got rid of the baby blue.
Oh, no.
How dumb can you be?
They didn't.
Who hired the idiot running the Chargers who refuses to make those baby blue beauties their official everyday away game or dark color jersey? I forgot the NFL is different. They need to make the baby blue the home jersey for the Chargers. So whatever idiot is in the front office and refuses to do that for the Chargers somehow weaseled his way into the Kroenke operation over there in Denver and got him to get rid of the baby blue.
You just said the magic word, and that's Kroenke. So that tells you right there.
And they had incredible jerseys, and they blew it.
They didn't go back to the rainbow ones, did they?
No, and that's what everyone wanted. In fact, I thought this would be better. They killed the baby blue, except for the fact that it's the outline of the Denver and the Nuggets still. It essentially looks like they jacked Marquette's or the Pacers' old uniform.
Okay.
It's the most boring, terrible thing in the world.
That is a little bland.
It's entirely bland. The baby blue has been taken away, except for, as you can see, they're still using it as the outline of the Denver and the Nuggets, but it looks out of place now because everything else is navy blue. Does that not look like Marquette's jersey?
Pretty much.
It's the Marquette basketball jersey all over again.
Did you see that?
I got people disagreeing with me. Absolutely ridiculous.
I saw our friend Arlington Lane post something on Facebook last night with the San Antonio Spurs, what their new jersey is going to look like. I think maybe it's a special one.
Yeah, that's
a throwback one.
Yeah, that's a throwback one.
With the teal and the pink. Yeah, that looks awesome. And he says he's going to try to get one in a David Robinson jersey. If he gets one of those in a David Robinson, he'd be the man. That would be the best throwback. The best throwback jersey I've ever saw. I saw this old woman. I work for a too-big-to-fail bank. And this older woman was walking around wearing a UNLV Larry Johnson number 4 jersey. And I'm like, where did you get that? And she goes, oh, my grandson, he gets them, and sometimes he doesn't like them, so he gives them to me. I'm like, you're walking around in a maroon Larry Johnson UNLV jersey. That thing is just amazing.
Our good friend Dave is telling me I'm wrong, but you cannot tell me that navy looks better than the baby blue. You can't tell me
No,
that.
I like the baby blue
Thank
better.
You very much, Matt Berger. I mean, that's just, come on. This is, you just ruined one of the best jerseys.
I think the Chargers will probably change their jersey, kind of like the Rams will, whenever Kroenke's new palace opens up in Inglewood.
Yeah, but the problem is they probably won't make the smart move. And the smart move is undeniably you roll with the baby blues.
Oh, there's no way.
At least seven out of eight games.
They'll roll the baby blues.
No, the problem is
the Chargers will.
The Chargers only go with, I'm saying I have doubts. I believe they actually, there was an announcement when they made the move that they were like, I know everyone's talking about uniform changes. I've already been told that they won't make baby blue their primary color, which is, in my opinion, insanity. Mainly because if you look at their logo, I'm pretty sure their logo has more baby blue than that navy they roll with.
Yeah.
So it's insanity, and now Denver has made the same mistake. And Dave, you are wrong, sir.
Speaking of ugly uniforms, not to completely rag on the Rams, but their uniforms this year are just horrendous.
What are they doing?
I have no idea what they're doing.
They have like 4 different shades of blue, a couple different shades of white. I don't even know where the gold is. I mean, I'm okay.
The gold is pretty much gone. I'm okay with a little bit of trim.
If you shift back to the old school blue and white ones, I always kind of wanted the Rams to do that as a throwback jersey, but you got to do it correctly. You can't do it the halfway where they change the helmet, but the jerseys are still the ones like they had here in St. Louis, so the helmet doesn't match anymore.
They need to go back.
The helmet's badass. Just right now, the helmet they're going to roll out with this year, I love it. The white and blue, there's just a straight blue with white horns and a white face mask. I love the helmet. The problem is against the jersey, the rest of the jersey, it's terrible. It looks like complete total crap.
Well, I mean, the play on the field is going to look like crap, so it kind of stands to reason.
Yeah, I mean, I love the helmet, but they still have that dull gold they were using here in St. Louis on the shoulders, and they still and the weirdest thing is the ram horn has no gold in it, and yet their logo still has gold ram horns.
Yeah,
you got this is
they've actually done a terrible job of marketing since they've been back to Los Angeles.
I know there's rules the NFL has about how much you can change year by year, but why not just sit on the Badgers you had coming here from St. Louis because they were ugly. And just wait until you can do a full-on everything at once, sweep, you know, wipe
gotta,
the slate clean, come gotta, in with the gotta blue make and gold.
Got to make a splash.
Come in with the blue and the white.
You got to make a splash. You got to create hype for a city that hasn't had football in 20 years.
I personally think there's no such thing as too much baby blue in sports uniforms. I think it's the most underused color. It always looks good. Never looks bad.
Especially like the California teams, it kind of does. Looks good in that California sunshine.
It does. I agree 100%.
The first hour of the program is brought to you by Thomas Bax and American Family Insurance. Look, there is no way to get around it. You are going to need insurance. Whether it's your car or your house or even your life, you need to be insured. But who can you trust? You can't go with a cartoon army general or a talking lizard. I made the call to Tom Bax with American Family Insurance at 314-298-7770. And not only did I save a ton on my car and renter's insurance, I know I've got coverage and an agent I can depend on. You really can't put a price on peace of mind, and that's what you'll get when you call Tom Bax with American Family Insurance, 314-298-7770. Call now, mention you heard it on That 590 Show, and get a $10 gift card. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, we're going to be joined by Howard Balzer from BalzerFootball.com and the Hall of Fame Show on the NFL Channel on Sirius XM. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM at InsideSTL.com. Drop it for me. I'll rent a beach house in Miami.